And whether they come up 1-2 or 2-1 really is immaterial. The important thing is to get that right selection of contenders and pace lines. So I am not trying to duplicate Thoroughmation by using a simple external mathematical calculation, but I'm trying to approximate it as an aid before the fact to reduce the number of entries that I make into the program. Okay, here we're going to be doing the first race in the booklet, which is the second race on April 25th. Now, what's the significance of April 25th? This was the first day in which the daily, the racing times speed ratings were incorporated into the daily racing form. When the racing times was available last summer, many people used to buy both the times and the daily racing forms and write the racing times speed rating beside the daily racing form speed rating. Well, starting on April 25th, we have this situation existing in the form. And what I wanted to do was to follow up on a presentation given by William Scott at the Baltimore seminar, in which he recommended a procedure for contender selection. Now, this is a mechanical procedure, and mechanical procedures have shortcomings associated with them in that occasionally you can have a bad horse that you might potentially be entering into the computer. But that's where the rating system that I just presented to you comes into play, because that will hopefully eliminate the possibility of your entering that bad horse. The Scott approach will get a collection of horses which are worthy of your looking at. Let's put it that way. Now, here is the procedure as presented by Scott. You take the top two races in the racing form and circle the higher of the two. Now select the three horses who have the highest ratings. You now have three contenders in the race. Okay? The next step of the remaining eight or less races, you've already dealt with the top two, so forget about them. Look at the remaining races and circle the best rating for each horse. Don't worry about turf, don't worry about dirt, don't worry about anything. Using the buyer ratings only. I'd like to refer to them as the race, former Racing Times ratings. Okay? Now you circle the best of the rest and take the top three of them. If there is no overlap, you've got six contenders. If there is overlap, you could have as few as three. If there are ties, of course, you might have one or two extra. Now, this will get you a very good population of horses to look at. And in the manual with the details, I've indicated the best of the top two and then the best of the rest for each horse. And I've rank ordered them so that you'll see if they are number one, two, or three.
Is that secret detail in the manual?
Yes.
Yes, it is. Yeah, everything that I've presented and all the screens that you've seen so far and will see are in the manual, so you'll be able to review them, and if you have any questions, you know, you can see me tomorrow on it. Okay, now, by employing that procedure and also taking a look at APV and class, we want to take a look at that second race run on the 25th of April. This race is on page 11 in your manual. Okay, if we take a look at Jimbo Gator, he had a 59 APV and a 1.22 class rating. The speed ratings, which you can verify right there, a 75, which is the better of the top two, an 80, which is the best of the rest, and neither one of these qualify as number one, two, or three. In case there's a question about the APV, I did use the standard Sarton methodology approach of penalizing the horse by giving him a win in determining both APV and class. This
Glenn,
horse, yeah.
Glenn, we have a question over here.
Could you tell me what class formula you use?
Well, Howard went into this yesterday. It's the class formula that's in the book. If you want to do a cheap and dirty with a calculator, you assume that the winner gets 60% of the purse, the place horse gets 20.
No, I don't mean APV. I'm talking about class.
Oh, class. Okay. The winning of APV in the money percentage and win percentage, I don't have the ratios in mind, but it's a combination of those three factors.
Well,
APV is a prominent part of it, in the money percentage and then win percentage. And it's built into all of the programs. You have a menu selection of class APV. And just
I wanted to do it manually is what I'm trying to get at.
If you have the appropriate follow-up, the equation has been published in the follow-up.
Glenn?
Yeah.
Why don't we get Dick Schmidt to give us the follow-up number? Is Dick Schmidt in here? Thank you. Yeah, I'll tell you what, go on and I'll go find Dick Schmidt.
Okay. Yeah, because that has been published, but it was a couple of years ago. I'm not saying it isn't. However, not everybody uses both ratings, and I myself use only APV because I find APV
Here
to be
Dick.
The most predictive of potential place horses.
Dick?
Yes, sir.
The question to the floor is that a gentleman in the back would like to compute the class figure manually, and no one can recall what follow-up it was in or the formula, and we thought maybe you would be able to do that. No, he wouldn't.
Because it has profit track and daily bill, that's kind of different.
You,
and I don't have to do TPR to make it any better.
Well, that was illuminating. Well, what follow-up issue was it in? Do you recall?
He wants to do it at the track, with a.
All right, Glenn.
Let's continue with this race. We've taken a look at Jimbo Gator, and basically he is not a contender according to the criteria of using the speed ratings. Now, there have been a couple of questions up here, so let's reiterate what we're using. We're using the former Racing Time speed ratings. They are in bold type. They precede the post-position indication, and usually are right under the abbreviation for trainer and after the class column in your daily racing form. Okay? That's the speed rating that we're talking about. Yeah.
Interruption again. What's his name again? John Sherwood has the formula for the class factor. So if you want the formula, you can get it from John at the break. You have one more question over here before you go too far. Ladies, set her hand up for a while. I haven't been able to get to the side of the room. Oh, all right. The question is, she wonders why there's such a discrepancy between the daily track variant, according to the racing form, and the buyer number.
And one of the reasons, but I'll address that, there's no reason to turn that over. The reason for that is the buyer people are using a daily tracked variant that is far more scientific than the racing form. The racing form speed rating and track variant are just based on the averages of the races that were run that day. The other is more sophisticated, so you'll find a big difference. The buyer second race back is a better number than the last one. Just accept that there was probably a better race for the horse, too. They're apples and oranges. If you really want to know which was the best performance, use the buyer as opposed to the other. Sorry, Glenn, you're on your way.
No problem. However, let's get this straight. I'm trying to give you a very simple procedure for isolating the horses that you should make sure you take a look at. It is very mechanical, but it's a great way to get started and to get oriented with a race. And the bottom line is, understand it, and if you like the thoughts of that approach, using a number that has track-to-track and daily variant and all that stuff cranked in, as the racing time numbers do, then just do it. Do it. See what happens. If you like it, great. If you don't like it, we have many other tools that are very effective in identifying contenders, and use whatever pleases you. Now, this one worked pretty good. In fact, one thing that I'll mention right now is in the manual, you will see an overview of every race on the card that day on April 25th. Because of time limitations, we're only going to do one of the races. There are two manual in great detail. But if you're interested in further analyzing and working with the overview that I presented for each race, write to the Daily Racing Form, ask them for the April 25th edition, Eastern edition, which is what I do for almost every seminar, and you can spend some more time looking at the other 10 races on the card. At any rate, read those overviews, because I tried to pack a piece of information, a packet of information, into each one of them. Okay, Speedy Goscinny, he's going to be out. Terrible performances in 1992. I would point out to you that he would have had the highest two-year APV in class ratings, but without a single good race showing, my attitude was, why bother? I threw him out. I'll Take a Stand ends up being a contender.
What about Silver who?
Silver Vane, the sprinter in the race. Okay, I did that intentionally, but since it bothers you a little bit, we'll do it. This is the unusual horse in the race. We're doing a route. Here we have a sprinter and a route. Also, we have a sprinter who's dropping from 25,000 to 16,000, which makes this an attractive race because he is going to draw some money to him. Okay? Now, some points of concern should be the fact that he is dropping off a pretty good race. You know, finishing second at 25,000, now they're willing to give up $9,000 and drop him. That should be a point of concern. In marking up my racing form, I indicated that Silver Vane is the consensus top pick in this race. Now, here's something that might be of use to you. He's the consensus top pick, but none of his pace lines, or at least none of the most recent pace lines, occur within the structure of today's race. So what I then like to do is to go look at the second consensus top pick, which is 1-2 Punch, and notice that his last race is at a mile and a 16th. The next step that's worth doing is looking at 1-2 Punch. Was he involved in a tandem race? And indeed he was, with the horse after him, My Boy Arthur, in the Rin Tin Bid race. So 1-2 Punch, we'll come back to in a minute. He's the tandem best finisher in that particular tandem race. Now, in Silver Vane's case, we have to make a determination if we feel that there's a possibility that he could stretch out today. And yesterday I mentioned to you, I guess it was in the beginner's session, that APV is a very powerful weapon in looking for sprinters who can stretch out, particularly if they are the top APV in the race today. In doing APV in class 4 Silver Vein, he had a 148 APV and a 1.31 class rating. All of these numbers are contained in the other manual, so don't worry about getting them. Now, there are a couple of ways that we can determine whether or not the horse can stretch out. One is using a combination of speed rating plus variant, and now I'm talking about daily racing form speed rating plus variant, in which the sprinter should have at least a 3, better a 5-point edge over the best rooter in the race. That's one approach. Another approach, and one that I prefer, is to project the sprinter to a route, and it's going to seem like a long stretch, but it's based on some principles that are contained in the matchup manual. In the matchup manual, there are a number of tables regarding Sarton Downs, and it gives the final time of races at all of the distance that would be run at a racetrack. That table is based on a six-second increment per half furlong. So as you go from 6 furlong, assuming 110, the next would be 6.5 at 116, and so on. However, once the structure changes to a two-turn race, there's an additional 10/5 or 2 seconds added in those Sarton Downs charts, and then it reverts to 6 seconds per half furlong. Now, I have not found that serviceable for me at the Eastern tracks, but it certainly provided the framework to determine what was an appropriate set of times to be used. What I've found very serviceable is 13 seconds per furlong, or 6.25 per half a furlong, and instead of adding 2 seconds when we change the structure from a sprint to a route, I add 5 seconds. So let's take a look at top line for Silver Vein. The top line for Silver Vein is a 112 final, and if we added 26 to that, which would be 4 furlongs, 26 and 12 is 38, 1 second for the turn, 39, and then we'll add 6.3 seconds to project them to 8.5 furlongs. That would be 145 and 3.
Can I do that slower again?
Sure. For 6 furlongs, you've got 112. We're talking about 13 seconds per furlong. So we go from 6 to 7, 7 to 8, okay? So that's going to be 12 plus 26, 13 twice. 26 and 12 is 38. You've now got them stretched out to a mile. But now you have to take into consideration the turn. So add one more. That's 39. We're still at 1 mile, but we're around 2 turns. What? 1 second. For the turn. That's 5/5, okay? Then we have to account for the remaining half a furlong, and I mentioned 113 for a furlong. A half a furlong would be 6.25. When I am going up in distance, increasing the distance, I add 6.3. If I'm cutting back in distance, I subtract 6.2. Why do I do it that way? Because it's convenient, it works, it doesn't matter. If you want to use them the other way around, it's not going to make any difference. Therefore, we'd end up with 39 plus 6.3, which would be 145 and 3.
Glenn?
Yeah.
Question over here.
Well, let me make this one point. If we have a pace of the race of 145 and 3, he's going to be in against horses who have run a 144 and 4, against a 144 and 4 final time. So off that top line, he's, maybe a contender, but if we take a look at the second line back, we'll see he's a solid contender. Question?
Yeah.
Yes, on your, you said 13 seconds per furlong?
Yeah.
Okay, and you said a half a furlong, 6.25? Wouldn't that be 6.5 instead of 6.25?
5/10 or 2.5/5/10. Same thing.
I'm talking fifths.
Okay.
Fifths, okay.
Yeah. Any other? Okay, if we go to the second one back, we have a 111.2, add 26, you know, there's a 137, add 1, that's 138, add 6 and 3/5, 138, 144 gives you a 145 flat. A 145 flat against a 144 that the rooters produced says that this horse is a contender in the race, and indeed that's why he's the top consensus pick. Dropping from 25, he's going to suck up a lot of money, and that's great. Because we're out to beat him.
Can you do that line one more time?
Sure. 111.2 plus 26. Okay. Plus 1. Okay, so we have the 26, 37, the 138, then for the final half furlong. 6.3, you know, 6 3/5. That's 144, and 2 is 145 flat. Okay?
Can I add a word of caution before
you
go any further? Don't just arbitrarily go home and apply that 26 seconds, though. Make sure that you understand your racetrack. And it works here, but in Southern California versus Northern California, a horse that runs 110 and 1 at Santa Anita stretches out to about 144 and 1. At Golden Gate, that same 110 and 1 stretches out to about 143 and 1. And just make sure it's grounded on your... Because otherwise you're going to come back and say, Connolly didn't know what the hell he was talking about.
No.
He certainly does for his racetracks, but make sure that this applies at home as well.
Yeah. In fact, we've got to admonish you that everything you hear here has to be adapted or adopted to your local circuit. I started out by mentioning Sarton Downs was based on 12 seconds per furlong, and that reflected the Southern California situation. It did not work for me. Since it didn't work for me, I found out what did work. And a very useful way of doing this is to use the 10K procedure that's spelled out in Tom's book to determine what the appropriate times are at each distance at your track. And you'll know precisely what you should add for each half furlong or subtract for each half furlong, what it takes to go from the sprint structure to the route structure. And if you have a table of 10K times at each distance, you're going to know the answers to all of these things. So indeed, it's your responsibility to adapt, or if it applies, adopt what's presented to you in this seminar. Okay, Speedy Gassini, we've already thrown out. I'll take a stand as a contender. And let's give a quickie example here on I'll take a stand. If we look at his speed ratings, he qualifies on that 95 as the best of the rest. His last race is about a 145. Now, how do we get that? The final time pace of the race is 144 and 1. He has a final beaten lengths of 9 1/4. 40% of 9 1/4 is about 3.6. Okay, I'm going back to the rating system now. 3.6. So let's call that 4/5 of a second. 4/5 of a second added to the 144 and 1 gives you a 145 flat. Okay? And that 145 flat is what we determined the sprint race second back would be for Silver Vein. Again, you can see that these are both contenders in the race.
Why did you use that
word? Because that's what the first part of the presentation was all about, in determining what the appropriate weighting was of beaten lengths to come up with a rating that would approximate the order in which the horses would finish in running the horses across the thurimation screen. I'm trying to predict that order of finish before I even put the horses into the race, because this will enable me to pick the right pace line, hopefully the right pace line, and to isolate the true contenders and to verify that the race and time speed ratings have indeed given me horses who belong in the computer. Now, let me tell you where those ratings can go astray. Believe it or not, it surprised me that the weakness of those ratings is when you're looking at two horses who have run at the same track at the same distance. Why the ratings vary the way they do, you know, I really don't comprehend. But I know that they do, and I also know that using this little rating system will put you on the right horse and the right pace line. They seem to do an excellent job when you have the track-to-track situation, which is one of the things that they handle on when you have multiple shippers in a race. Okay, 1-2 punch. He has an APV of 165 and a class rating of 2.13. He's number one on both ratings, and this really reflects the fact that he has a 50% win percentage and an 83% in the money performance this year. Those two ratings, class and APV, reflect that this horse really knows how to run his races. Also notice that if you were to look for a thurimation rating for him, it would be 144. 40% of three quarters of a length, you know, that's less than half. So he'd have a rating of about 144.4. Going to My Boy Arthur, a 98-176, and his speed ratings qualify him as number three in the better of the top two and the best of the rest. Also, he was in the tandem with 1-2 Punch, and has essentially the same rating, a 1-4, My Boy Arthur. However, I've found at the Maryland tracks that I seldom will discount the tandem best finisher because of the reasons that I mentioned at the beginner's session. Namely, if you have a tandem winner, he may have passed his peak in his performance cycle, whereas the tandem best finisher may still be on the improve. So seldom will I eliminate the tandem best finisher, particularly if he's going to pay a halfway decent price. And I want to mention to you that the two races I presented don't have any startling payoff, although people who work with me at Maryland and Arthur Cameron, who I introduced yesterday, has been using these ratings as sort of a double check on their effectiveness, and I think he's been quite satisfied with them. However, this is the kind of a bread and butter race, $7, $8, $9 that you have to be able to hit.
Question for you, Glenn.
Okay,
Glenn, what is the maximum amount of lengths you use in a tandem?
Well, the plus and zero guys are going to get all bent out of shape at me. In the manual, I say something about the numbers that you get become less reliable once you exceed about 20 lengths. Now, you have to... No, wait. Relax. You have to take this in context. In fact, we had a perfect example last Tuesday. Let's say that, like this race, there are only two horses out of a tandem. And one... Let's say he finished second, the other one finished five, and he was 15 lengths behind. In that particular race, there was one horse going up from 12,000. There were three in a tandem going up from 16. And they were meeting two horses who were dropping from 25,000, one of whom was the tandem best finisher in that 25,000 race, and the other one was less successful in his venture. Now, no way did I expect that other tandem horse to win the race, but I most certainly expected him to be on the board and to be a very likely place horse. And the horse is dropping from 25,000 down to 20, ran 1-2, and it paid a whopping price. So if there are four or five out of a tandem, then it makes eminent good sense to start eliminating or winnowing those horses who finish too far back. But if there are only two, I've seen tandems reversed where the second horse was beaten by the first horse by 30 lengths. But there was a good reason for it, because they were taking a substantial drop in class today that made him a legitimate contender. Also, the 30 lengths back were on a muddy track, and there were a lot of other relevant factors that you'd want to consider forgiving the horse for that poor performance. Also, he had won his second race back by four or five lengths, so that you know he wasn't a horse who was out of shape. He had a recent excellent performance, and he reversed the tandem and paid $30. Meanwhile, the other horse did run second. Okay, so we've sort of beaten the contender selection part of it into the ground. Let's take a look at the race, if someone would get the lights. Now, I have to mention something to you. I'm glad that we can see the names here, because I use a little code that might be of use to some of you. Okay, sorry about that. I use a little code that might be of use to you. Notice we have 1-1. That indicates to me that I use the top pace line on that horse. Okay? And then aisle-1. I use the top pace line on that horse as well. SLV-2 with a little S. That's Silver Vein, the horse who soaked up all that money. I used the second line back, which was the one that projected to about 145. And the little S indicates that that is a sprint line. Okay? So I can just glance at those names and see that here we have a mixed race. The particular case we have here is the sprinter and a route. The second race that's in your manual has the reverse situation, in which we used internal fractions and there was a router and it into a sprint. Now, another little private code I use, we have Jimbo, who was the rail horse. Technically, Jimbo did not qualify based on the use of the speed ratings that we talked about. However, he wasn't number 1, 2, or 3 in the better of the last two or the best of the rest. However, he ran against a very fast pace of the race, 47-3, 111-3, 144-3, and if you determine the rating on him, it's a 144-3 plus 40% of 3 lengths, which is 1.2. So he gets a rating of 144-4, which is very competitive with the other horses in the race. And that's a case where you want to be careful of using anything mechanical, because there may well be a horse who you have included who should be eliminated, and vice versa. And one of the best ways to identify this is looking for other horses in a tandem race who perhaps did not get the ratings but were right there. And you know you have to look at them. However, the lower case indicates to me that this is a horse that has a flaw of some type, and before I bet 50 cents on him, I want to go back and review that horse very carefully and make sure that it has generous odds if I'm going to consider betting him. One last point. Since we have the sprinter in the race, there are a couple of ways that we can proceed. If we were at Laurel, which we're not, we would use the automatic projector and just let it rip. However, using the automatic projector at Pimlico doesn't have quite the effectiveness in terms of identifying the win, place, and show horse, and therefore the procedure that I use at Pimlico is to leave the sprint line in exactly as entered and rely on the two adjustment from which to make my betting decisions. Now, in this particular race, when you get home, I know you're all going to take the input screens and enter these races into your computer and see how it occurs to you. But if you were to use the automatic projector in this race, you're still going to get the winner, okay? However, in many cases, you would not get the place horse in an exacta if you were to use the automatic projector procedure. Okay, why don't you let the Theramation screen... Well, no, let's go right to the two adjustments, the router in there. In doing the races, I do always look at both one adjust and two adjust. Although Jimmy gave us a wonderful procedure down in New Orleans where it's not necessary to do this, but particularly in the case of a sprinter going into a route, I like to look at them both ways. Let her rip, Spencer. Now, we went by the kinetic generator screen pretty fast. The principal point there was that all of the horses had a running style that was sustained presser. One came up sustained, and that was Silver. Also, from that kinetic generator screen, I pay great attention to the total energy of each of the horses and usually record that in my little notebook. Now, notice, Theramation indicates one and my as the two finishers in that race. If we had used the one adjust, we would see Silver and one. So you're going to get one. On to the instant preplay, please. Now, at the time I did this race, I'm going to repeat that. At the time I did this race, Pimlico was running early in sprints and sustained in routes. The reason I want to emphasize this is that Howard has indicated that you go back from the seminar and you repeat or quote something that was said here, which is no longer applicable. At this moment, at Pimlico, the sprints are running sustained and the routes are running early. Okay? The reason for that is we've had a lot of wet weather. The racetrack has got muddy, good, fast for a day, more rain, muddy, sloppy, good, lousy. And, you know, the distance bias, we still believe that the mix of the contenders is the most important thing, but I keep my records based on sprints and routes. And at Pimlico, where the racing is pretty boring, we've got one distance, 6 furlongs for sprints, and basically 8.5 furlongs at routes. At Laurel, life gets a little spicier and more interesting, and you want to keep your distances separated within the sprint and the route structure. Okay, so the SP screen is the screen that we're going to look for the winner, for your win bets. And they are one and my. And we can look for the designated place horse, which is the horse in the middle panel that touches the line first, and that's Silver. One won the race. He paid $780. Silver placed paid $320. I'll Be Along in Time showed and paid $340. Exactly what you'd expect. Now, continue on, Spencer. I want to show just a couple of more wrinkles here. Okay, there's the EXDC screen. Notice the designated place horse must repeat. In fact, I want to make sure that you people understand something, because if you want to come up and talk about how to keep the records and what to bring to the track, the first two panels are identical on both instant preplay screens. So if you've written it down once for SP instant preplay, there's no need to repeat it because it's going to be exactly the same. And this is a phenomena that's been in all of the programs for a long time. Energy early and late, even though the numbers were different, if you rank ordered them, the first two columns were always precisely the same. Okay? Keep going, please. The next. Okay, I want to point out something here. Okay, 1 has the best third fraction of 3205. And if you look at 1 in the various, notice that the EMUV and SMUV values are identical. And one of the things that you need to recognize in interpretation is that your best third fraction horse is always the best even MUV horse. Because of time limitations, I don't think I'll have the time to go into more of the interpretation, but the point I'm trying to illustrate here is that by looking at the Thurimation screen, you can predict fairly accurately not only what EXDC will tell you, but it will also allow you to determine what the KGEN program would tell you. When you first get a program like this, you should explore, as Howard has said hundreds of times, every single screen. Explore those screens and then end up using the screens that have the most relevance to you, the ones that are most useful to you. And this is one thing that I find very, very handy. The even MUV horse, best third fraction horse. Continue, please. Continue. Okay, paradigms. I find this one of the most useful screens going. At one of the seminars, I believe it was Baltimore, Tom Brohammer indicated that at Hollywood Park, the races, I believe sprints, were being won by the Presser paradigm. Is that right, Tom?
Yeah, that was Santa Anita.
Santa Anita, okay. So he mentioned that he'd put the horses in the computer and zip to the screen, find out who the paradigm presser was, and go bet it. So I went home and went through a similar exercise to try to find out what I should be betting. And I found out that I couldn't get a winner to save my life. But you know what? I could get contenders to beat the band. This paradigm screen is fantastic. Notice that 1 has the top rating in all three paradigms. Paradigm early, paradigm presser, paradigm sustained. You think he's got a chance to win this race? You bet he does. My, he's number 2 in all three of the paradigms, and silver is number 3. And if you were to box those three, you have the exacta, right? Now, what kind of a horse can upset this screen? Believe it or not, it's the horse who would be the designated place horse. And what I actually do in my handicapping is I try to determine, by looking at the matchup, who the best turn time or second fraction horse is. I include him as a contender in my races. Then I go to the paradigm screen, assuming I've got to the point where I have 1 pace line per horse, and it doesn't matter whether I've got 3, 4, or more, but I let the paradigms tell me who the legitimate contenders are in the race, and I just put a check mark on my racing form. Okay? Very, very useful. Next screen. Okay, let's go down to the bottom of the screen, the deceleration ratio. Here we look for the hundreds. The hundreds indicate that there's no deceleration. And we see that I has 100 in the first and second column, and 1 has 100 in the third column. And since we expect this race to run sustained, again, 1 comes up as a solid win contender, win bet for this particular race. Make sure you go over these races carefully. Take a look at the second race that has the internal fraction consideration These are the kind of races in which there's only one little monkey wrench, you know, the sprint and the root, the other one, the rooter and the sprint, but you've got to be able to handle them. You've got to be able to get those $7, $8, $9 horses. Otherwise, you're not going to be very successful at the track, because having $30, $40, $50 horses, which indeed this program can give you, any program can give you, really, if you pick the right contenders. In fact, those long shots will often come from the second group of speed rating horses, the best of the rest. Okay? Any questions?
Oh, sure. Make me come over there.
Go for it, Oprah. Okay. All right.
I was a little confused when you were starting about the 40%. Now, with respect to I'll Take a Stand, is the purpose of the 40% analysis to determine which of the two pace lines you're going to use on I'll Take a Stand?
Indeed, that's one very viable, important use of that rating. Yes. Let's take a look at I'll Take a Stand's last race. That's a 144 and 1 plus 4 lengths. That's a 145. Next race back is a 145 and 3, and he's basically 4 lengths back. That's a 1.6. Make it 2, okay? So that makes that a 146 flat. If you put a 146 flat in against 144s, there's a difference of about 6 points. That difference of about 6 points in that rating is going to reflect in a difference of about 3 energy points when you look at your kinetic generator. It's going to dictate that two adjustment for the race. Okay? Now, don't worry about that energy differential business right now. That also is in the manual, but you use it to pick contenders. You can use it